1889 brings us from the Glen of Aherlow back in on our virtual tour to Cashel, to Cashel Cathedral, the ancient cathedral church of the what was once the Archbishopric of Cashel, the ecclesiastical capital of Munster, going back certainly in its prominence to the 12th century, and we all know about the Rock of Cashel. But as we think of today's 18th century cathedral, its dean, chapter, clergy and parishioners, we pray for all who strive to make the ministry and capacity to connect of perhaps our smaller cathedrals nevertheless imaginative and effective in the world we're in, because it's quite amazing how cathedrals as focal points for art, for imagination, for culture, for sociability, as well as preeminently for worship, remain magnets in the world we know, when often other manifestations of being church are doing less well or even in decline. 1889, as we think of the stability of Cashel, 1889 was a year of great turbulence in Irish politics. Just as the rather wearied Gladstone prepared himself, full nevertheless of fervour for his cause at the end of the year, for one further go at home rule, and it was to come unsuccessfully 4 years later. Just at that time, and he was in preparing his proposals in close discussions with Charles Stuart Parnell. At the very end of the year, on December the 30th, the newspapers revealed Parnell's long intimacy, much talked about but perhaps not publicised in print, with Mrs. Catherine O'Shea, which will lead in due course to her husband, Captain O'Shea, seeking divorce. It was a huge Victorian scandal. It split the Irish party forever. It really never recovered from it. And Gladstone, full of moral purpose and conviction, felt that he could no longer do effective business with Parnell. The following year, at the famous meeting in Committee Room 15 of the Palace of Westminster, the Irish party split. The famous question was rather maliciously asked by Healy, not simply who was to be the leader, the master of the Irish party, but, quote, who is to be the mistress of the Irish party. The Roman Catholic bishops denounced Parnell, and his candidate after the splitting of the party lost a by-election in Kilkenny. There's no doubt that just before Gladstone's final attempt at home rule by legislation, Parnell, Ireland's uncrowned king and the master parliamentarian, was undoubtedly destroyed by a sexual scandal which would appear almost modest today, given that his relationship with Mrs. O'Shea was long-standing and almost undoubtedly a very committed one. So one wonders today, as we're much more reticent in passing judgment on the private lives of leading figures, one wonders where we stand in terms of the moral compass of our expectations of people in public life. To what extent is the private life of politicians still material for the press? Do we not resent the voyeurism of the tabloid press? Are people not still entitled to privacy, provided there isn't a lack of integrity in their lives, that they're not denouncing something in public while doing the same thing in private? To what extent even is the private life of politicians affected by whether or not the residence in which they live is literally public property? These all remain questions for our time, but it is undoubtedly the tragedy of Parnell that he was completely destroyed by a scandal which to Victorians was massive. To us, might appear quite modest. And it would seem that the whole affair, if you forgive the pun, broke his health and his heart. And it was only a few years after that when he died while still, in many ways, his what should have been his political prime in terms of age.